Welcome to the Small Nonprofit Podcast with down-to-earth practical advice on how to get things done in your small organization. You are going to change the world and we can help. Welcome back to the show. Thanks for tuning into the Small Nonprofit. I am your host, Cindy Wagman, and I'm joined by my co-host, Anya McGlynn.
Hello, everybody.
So if you've been listening to the podcast for a while, you know we really love to talk about the nitty-gritty practical how-tos, but today's interview takes a step outside of that and looks at the sector as a whole. And I'm really excited to take that 30,000-foot perspective with our guest, Marina, from Canada Helps, because she's so wise and, you know, really has her finger on the pulse of the trends in our sector and what's coming down the pipelines.
Absolutely. I remember years ago when Marina first started at Canada Helps, and you know, my organization and Canada Helps had had a good relationship. So she and I went out for a couple cups of coffee because she was like, okay, what is this nonprofit sector thing? Like, this is, you know, she's coming from the private sector and from, like, you know, digital heavy. And we would just spend hours and hours and hours talking about the ins and outs of the specific challenges and differences that that nonprofits have to deal with. And I think you'll hear today, you know, that kind of like big picture thinking and perspective that that Marina brings. Look, it's not all roses, you know. In the conversation, you'll hear you know, some hard truths and I think, like, well-placed cynicism about the philanthropic sector in Canada and the public's relationship to it. So I think, you know, if you're, maybe you're having a little bit of a grumpy day and you're like, I want someone to commiserate with, and I want to feel like, yeah, you know what, I'm not alone. And these are challenges we're all facing. And think about, you know, the collective of your peers who are also in the same boat. I think this is the episode for today.
Exactly. With a good dosing of, like, you know, some optimism. I mean, certainly some big challenges we have to face as a sector, and, you know, really grounded in research and trends. So Marina really, really articulates, I think, all the things that all of us are thinking about or dealing with on a daily basis. So yes, you're not alone. Yeah. There's no perfect solution, but at least we can talk about it together.
Absolutely.
Awesome. All right. Well, here's our conversation with Marina. Marina Glogovac is a C-level executive with a 25-year track record of developing high-performance teams, scaling for growth, and building award-winning brands and organizations in both the for-profit and nonprofit sectors. She is passionate about charities and their essential role in Canada and about building the capacity of the charitable sector as a whole. Since 2013, Marina has been the president and CEO of Canada Helps, the largest donation platform in North America, and a fast-growing, technology-driven charitable social enterprise. Please join me in welcoming the fantastic Marina.
I'm so glad to be here.
Excellent. So can you tell us a little bit about the Giving Report and why you think it's necessary?
Well, we initially created the first Giving Report back in 2017, and it was part of the Ontario Trillium grant that we got in 2015, I think. And the third kind of part of that project was to create something like this that would be public facing. So we really wanted to bring something to Canadians and bring something to the public that would, you know, help them understand better, you know, the profile, the trends, the issues affecting the charitable sector. And that really was because I saw, and, you know, I think we did here at Canada Helps, that there is little out there that it's, I mean, there is, you know, there is information about individual charities. There is, you know, some information here and there, but there is really nothing that comprehensively looks at what's happening in the charitable sector and then shares that with the public. And the public, the Canadian public, does not does not necessarily know or understand the story of the charitable sector in Canada in its totality. Mm-hmm. Again, they may know about, you know, a charity that they are engaged or a few, but, and that's really somewhat paradoxical for, you know, for such a huge sector, a sector that it's, you know, that employs almost 10% of the full-time Canadian workforce, that is growing, that, you know, is a big part of the GDP. And I always felt that, you know, people know more about, you know, the banking sector or the financial sector or the oil or any number of other sectors, but they don't really have easily accessible information on the charitable sector. And so that was really our intention. So that was the first year. And the second year was the one that we launched last year. And primarily, we are analyzing, you know, multi-year data source from Canada Revenue Agency, Stats Canada, including T1 Family File, you know, T1 Final Statistics, T3010, which are the the charity, and also the intention. And also this year, we partnered with Imagine Canada to work with their data team to also even, you know, dug deeper in some areas. And the intention is really to be releasing this every year, to be updating the baseline, and then to have some special highlight on a particular issue or a set of issues.
Mm-hmm. It's really great. And obviously, as a charity sector professional, I'm super interested in the data. And I'm also really interested to hear you say that, you know, this is really meant as an education tool for those of our listeners who may be outside the sector, or for readers who aren't necessarily working within the sector. And that's really interesting. I hadn't necessarily thought about it that way. I was like, oh, okay, this is all for the insiders, but you're right. I think it does serve as a good public education tool. And so I wonder if some of the reason or the answers to my next question are going to be within that that understanding that this is meant for public education. But you know, the first section of the report's called Canada's Charitable Sector is Facing an Impending Crisis, which is like a heart-stopping headline, right? I wonder if you could reflect a little bit about why you think that this crisis is happening, and you know, how charities can begin to respond to it, particularly based on the analysis that that the report offers.
Right.
It's a big question. I recognize that. Yeah.
It really is. I mean, it's a million-dollar question. I mean, we know from other reports and other studies, there was the Rita Hall, you know, 30 years of giving. There are other reports. So we know that the giving in Canada is going down. Mm-hmm. And our report, both the 2017 and this year, really confirmed that. So if you understand some of the key trends and you understand that this is now a trajectory, this is kind of where things are headed, and, you know, you combine this with some other factors, then you understand that this is a looming crisis. And, you know, once you kind of understand that big picture, I mean, Imagine Canada has done some work in trying to quantify this. And I read it. It's the paper called, it's actually a report called Charities, Sustainable Funding and Smart Growth. And there was a, you know, section there called A Case of Urgency. So they really took the same data that we have, and they tried to project, you know, what that means in real kind of dollars and real impact. And they saw that almost 30% of donations are really at a serious risk of exiting the charitable sector in the next 10 years, right? Wow. And so then you go, okay, well, who cares, right? Well, that is now juxtaposed with more demand for services because of the social and, you know, consumer and demographic trends, right? So there is this kind of collision, right, between less funding and more needs for services. And really, the majority of smaller charities that provide some of these services for, you know, new immigrants, for settling, for, you know, helping older people, because we do have an aging population, are the charities that are the most dependent on you know, the donors, direct giving, and that's kind of what's going down. And so how are we going to experience this? It will be, you know, closure, you know, less services, longer wait times, you know, more stress on the charitable organizations that are really like stretch out then to deliver and maintain and keep up with the demand for services. But, you know, when we look at just kind of some really key data is like, there are a few things that, as I said, like are major trends that, first of all, giving, I'm just looking at my chart here, like when we look at giving from, you know, 2006 to 2016, yeah. It grew, it really basically flatlined, like this is before yeah. inflammation. But in the meantime, the population increased significantly, right? Yeah. So you can look at it from, wow, like the giving is going down while the population in Canada has literally exploding. Yeah. And you look at then, you know, specific segments. And as I said, we dug deeper and you see that giving is down across all age groups. And, you know, back in 2015, one in four people donated. And in 2016, 1 in 5. So that's, wow. So we went from like 25% participation to 20%. Yeah, and also to make things worse, at the same time, the average annual donation per Canadian has decreased from, you know, $365 to $343. Yeah. And then you go into, and look at a specific age groups. And that's actually where you start seeing major trouble, right? Because you see that clearly that philanthropy in Canada has been increasingly falling on the shoulders of a shrinking pool of aging donors, 55 plus. This is the only group that has increased their giving in absolute dollars because they gave more on average, each person. But this is also the group that has experienced one of the largest declines in participation, right? Because this group is exiting. Now, the group that comes right up to them, the next cohort, which is like 45 to 54, has experienced the largest decline in giving, right? So it just doesn't bode well, right? And then you get into younger demographics, and now you're dealing with a completely different reality, right? Where you clearly see that younger people are not donating as much as their parents. And, you know, there is lots of debate. Is this like a stage of life? Is this, I personally think that it's qualitatively different worldview, different engagement, different, yeah. It's like, as I said, like it's a different reality. So when you combine all that, and then you also go, oh, 80% of charities in Canada are small. They operate on less than $500,000 per year in total revenues. And, you know, 91% have 10 or fewer staff. And, you know, more than half of them are volunteer run, right? And these are the ones that are the most impacted by this, because most of the government funding, like a lion's share, goes to 1% of charities, the universities and hospitals, right?
Yep.
So that's kind of when you combine all this, when you look at everything, that's kind of where, you know, you go, wow, like this is not looking good. And yeah. I mean, the second part of your question is what charities can do. Honestly, Anya, I wish I knew. There is no silver bullet for sure, because yeah. the era that we live in with younger people, you know, just being fundamentally different and having different preferences, I think it's going to be challenging, you know. And if I said to you, charities have to invest with a huge sense of urgency into their own capacity, digital transformation, technology, data literacy, you know, ability to see how they can thrive and take advantage of access to technology, which is free. But then you understand the charities don't invest into themselves and that there is a very entrenched and old paradigm that prevents them from doing that. So, you know, I mean, I'm sorry if I'm a bit of a pessimist here, despite the fact that charities do amazing work that I think it's underappreciated.
It deeply is. And I don't feel like you're being a pessimist. I think, you know, the numbers don't lie. Really.
Yeah. And we see this all the time with our clients. And I'd love to ask you, thinking of small charities, because typically that's who listens to our podcast, have you seen anyone start to figure it out. So as a whole, the sector is not taking action, right? When we think of crisis, we think fight or flight or freeze. Yeah. And I think for the most part, people are in that frozen stage. Is there anyone who's standing out or emerging as someone who is effectively able to fight it or figure out a new model?
Yeah. Well, I think, I mean, who came to mind is a smaller charity out of Calgary called Brown Begging for Calgary Kids. And there are many others like them. I think there are charities that have been affected with social media, that have been more effective in telling their stories out there. Because really what's available to us now is that we can all be publishers, we can all be content producers. And one of the most powerful assets that charities have are the stories, right? Mm-hmm. Now, unfortunately, often the for-profits, the ad agencies that work for foundations that are corporations tell better stories. You know, I watched this ad, which was a Kleenex ad, and up until the very last moment, I thought it was an ad for charity, right? Yeah. The sentiment of the times is social good, and that's what millennials want. They want to feel good about what they're doing. And lots of corporations are really co-opting and appropriating this language and using it for their own, you know, internal marketing purposes and, you know, employee engagement. And so I see charities kind of falling behind because they have the content. They're the original social enterprises. They really understand those issues, but they're not all necessarily good at telling those stories. And, you know, in absence of, you know, more complex kind of technology infrastructure, data literacy, understanding how to use open source or platforms, or, you know, having a bit of a strategy around using channels, online channels effectively to at least tell the stories, which they have, well, that would be a good, huge thing, right? Because how people engage today is through the stories, right? And so the storytelling has become a lot more important. And, you know, when you look at crowdfunding and, you know, who are the skillful people who through crowdfunding raise, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars, are the good storytellers.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah. No, I think that's one thing. Yeah. You raise a really great, so many great points, really, obviously the importance of storytelling and even, you know, that the theme of the times is social good and seeing, you know, corporations taking up some of these, the sort of the natural space that had been occupied by charities. I guess the sort of the logical extension of that is, especially if you're a charity that's advocating for social change, if actually you see that social change taking place writ large in the big institutions that define our society, does that mean that to some extent the charity's work has been accomplished and has been done? Do you know what I mean? And so like, is there a sense in which, you know, maybe, and I'm not talking about essential social services, like, but rather, you know, some, you know, really advocacy campaigns that have been active for generations, like, and now starting to see that there's traction being, you know, being achieved in the corporate world or in, you know, governance structures of corporations and governments. Mm-hmm. So maybe, you know, I don't know if I'm just trying to be too Pollyanna about the whole thing. Is there a sense that can sometimes represent, you know, an overall positive achievement of the charitable sector to have moved the needles, but which, you know, nonetheless doesn't do anything to comfort those charities who are working, you know, on issues, whether they be advocacy or social services that are less likely to be taken up by a business. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's such a good question. I mean, it's definitely, I think, an evolving world. It's like a new frontier, I think. And that's, again, you know, we have technology, we have the fourth industrial revolution. People are not even, like, we're past the digital revolution. We're now in the fourth, where we have the AI and data and all sorts of convergences. And I think, you know, I it's hard for me to really have an independence, right? Like, it's, you know, lots of corporations are doing well, but this has now become a sort of the branding, it's the era of branding through, you know, companies redefining what they do as a social good versus, you know, whatever else are they really doing. And I mean, I worked in the for-profit technology commerce space for many, many, many years. So I'm sorry that I'm a bit cynical. And okay. I often am cynical, right? And yeah. And sometimes I get uneasy about this kind of, you know, profit and social good side by side, because I understand that in every corporation there remains,
profit motivation,
a group of
mother, yeah.
stakeholders that will always take, you know, and but then I don't want to dismiss all the work that, you know, Walmart is doing. I think it's complicated, and I think sometimes I get very uneasy because I feel that the motivation is not pure, and it's often based on solutionism and certain naivety, and I see that a lot in like social enterprises. Now, you know, do we need to have a whole bunch of people trying to do something and innovate, even if, you know, 99.9% of them are going to fail? Sure. You know, that's how things happen. So I often have mixed feelings about it. I think there is a way for corporations to partner with charities and to understand how to really add value versus doing something that may be a bit more self-referential. Like I was in Europe at the fundraising conference and I listened to this airline company in, you know, part of the world that, you know, has developed like a major charitable policy to help disadvantaged population at the same time where they were launching this cheap airline aimed at those types of customers. But, you know, I'm thinking, am I the only one uncomfortable in this room? The rest of the people didn't seem to care, right?
Yeah.
So
like
I don't know.
Yeah.
I think it's an evolving, I mean, certainly I think the lines are blurring. But I'm like a charity diehard, right? Because now that I met with so many charities and understood their issues, and I could be maybe cynical about them as well, because of course nothing's ever black and white. Yes. But I learn how much they understand about issues that they're trying to. And
to be honest, deep understanding.
And that understanding is not easy to achieve. Like it always drives me crazy when somebody thinks they can solve. It's just not that easy. This is not like manufacturing shoes or developing an app or selling a travel package. This is like far, far more systemic and complex. So I have to say that more often than not, I don't feel that there is enough understanding of the real assets the charities have. Because if I were, you know, a management consultant that is coming into the space and looking at the players and, you know, mapping who has what and who knows what, and if somebody asked me, well, what would be the fastest route to resolving some of our, you know, deepest social problems, I would say without hesitation, charities have to invest into themselves, because I would see the assets that they have as the fastest leverage because of that know-how, right? But that's not what's happening. And what often drives me crazy is that, again, as much as I love the innovation that comes from that space, right? Mm-hmm. I think charities are so often excluded from those conversations. And, you know, sometimes it's really their fault, right? But it's a complex environment, you know, and then you throw in, you know, younger people who, as I said, love the user experience, love the, you know, sophisticated and sleek UIs, and are really used to that. And they come to expect that.
Yeah.
And, you know, they have a whole different set of expectations. And I think it's going to be tough.
Yeah.
You know, I just think that. I mean, it's really nothing's black and white anymore. The world that we had 20 years ago when these are charities, this is who does charity, it's all changed.
Oh, radically so. Radically so. Yeah.
Stop the podcast just for a second. I just wanted to take a second to remind our listeners who may not know that this podcast is brought to you by the Good Partnership and Charity Village.
So a lot of people don't know that both of our organizations are deeply committed to making sure that there are tons of great resources available to small nonprofits in our sector. And so I want you to take a minute to go and access some of those great free resources. For the Good Partnership, you can visit thegoodpartnership.com and specifically on our homepage, or visit thegoodpartnership.com/guide. You can download a free resource that outlines all different kinds of fundraising strategies you might want to consider for your organization. And for CharityVillage.com, there's so many webinars and, of course, the podcast, articles. The list is endless. And, of course, you can post jobs there. Volunteer positions, posting is free. So make sure that you are checking out both websites to deepen your learning and continue to access great free stuff.
Great tip, Cindy. Now on with the podcast.
Well, no, I was going to ask, what are some of the tools or early investments that organizations need to be looking at? And I know, and I say this or ask this of you as the head of Canada Helps, which I think is part of that solution. But what are the areas that, what are some of the options out there that organizations can start to look to build and invest in themselves without obviously having massive amounts of capital?
Yeah. Well, I think, I mean, I was asked this at the panel like a couple of weeks ago. I mean, obviously, there are lots of platforms. You know, it's like the entire, I mean, we know that, I mean, giving's going down, but we know that, that online giving is going up and mobile giving is going up, right? So you can no longer ignore online and mobile. You do it at your own risk, right? So optimization of, you know, mobile and websites and really understanding how to systematize online donor acquisition and retention through, you know, the email retention strategy. Those some fundamental blocks in place, putting the, you know, the enabling Google and, but not just, you know, creating a framework of KPIs that you can start looking at in the online space and start making sense and connecting things that you do with, you know, results. I think that's just sort of kind of not going beyond that, right? In kind of more of the organizational technology profile, which I think will have to happen. And I think the hardest thing in this and the, you know, I mean, is the talent procurement, right? I think getting someone, and that's also going to be hard because those people that we're talking about, everybody wants them. Like it's expensive talent, but I would say getting expertise. I mean, to me, everything starts with learning and with kind of the HR because I kind of come from that line of thinking. It's all about learning. It's about talent. It's about expertise. It's because I often say, yes, there are technologies. Yes, there is, you know, barriers to entry have diminished. Yes, there is democratization. But all of it is behind the wall of know-how.
That's right. That's right. Right. Oh my goodness. So, yeah. Marina, you and I have talked a lot about that. And that is,
that's what needs to happen. Yeah.
I was looking at just some unstructured CRA data last week because I'm a nerd, I guess.
because I'm you are.
And,
you said it.
Yeah, I did. I said it. And I was looking at, you know, the line in the T3010s that asks charities to indicate how much that they had spent on staff training and you know, professional development. And I was looking at charities with revenues between I think it was 10,000 and 2 million, and the average spend on professional development and staff training was $1,500 total. And to your point, you know, how are charities going to be able to leverage, you know, new available tools and technologies when there's not necessarily a culture of investing and not necessarily to the organization's fault, but rather because of the expectations of what good, you know, financial practice looks like in a charity, right?
Yeah.
Like, I think it's probably an objective to, in your T3010, make sure that that amount is low instead of saying, hey, you know what, we're investing not only in the ability of our charity to deliver on our mission, but in the staff who constitute the charitable sector and who by and large themselves are young people in many cases, are starting off in their careers and represent the future of the Canadian workforce. So going back to your first point about that this report is intended to start a public conversation about the charitable sector, I think I'm glad that you framed it that way because that to me seems to be like the most important direction that you can take with it.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more.
Yeah.
On that point, like I especially agree because I think the media and public perception of charities has really leveraged or sort of played off of crisis, other types of crises where it is more like a charity is not performing or they're doing something bad with our money. So it's actually a really interesting counter crisis that I would even, you know, not pointing any fingers, but I don't think that the media has been particularly helpful in this trend. What kind of response have you had to this report from the media in terms of hearing this side of the sector?
Well, I mean, media is very sensationalistic. You know, the media landscape in this country, I mean, it's not as bad as in other countries, i.e. south of the border, but I mean, there are some good players there. But it's being diminished, you know, especially investigative journalism and kind of good. So we've had a lot. Well, this was our plan, really, is to have this be out there, and it was like I have tons of interviews in the first year and this year, and really there is this concern. I mean, I really use it to explain the consequences, right? Because the consequences have to do with you and me. The consequences don't have to do with some other people that we don't want to relate to, right? Like, that's what people have to understand.
Yeah.
Charitable sector and what charities do absolutely touches everyone, and it's everybody's concern. And I've been trying to talk about that big picture, right? You know, versus, you know, and, you know, charitable giving is down, and it's concern, you know, and the younger people are engaging elsewhere, and there is a lot of moving pieces. And however, the fundamental fact that charities do a lot of work, and that I at least often feel that it's not appreciated, again, in its totality of their role in society, and that that this may not be what we have in the future, right? And that should be everybody's concern. So I've used these interviews to really try and talk about that. Why does it matter, right? Because somebody can legitimately say, okay, well, whatever, who cares? Well, it really matters. It really matters.
Yeah. These are, as we love to say, very wicked problems. There's no question. But I think it's such an important conversation to have. Yes. So thank you for that.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, absolutely.
Just, you know, we've been talking about, you know, younger Canadians and certainly like not necessarily giving in traditional philanthropic ways. I wonder, you know, if we think about sort of traditional philanthropic practices, you know, donor solicitation and cultivation, et cetera, you know, thinking about that younger population, what do you think are some of the fundraising practices that we won't be doing in 10 or 15 years?
Yeah.
You know, if we think about like how traditional philanthropic practices happen.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I came from a magazine industry, and I can tell you that when the internet first kind of came into being, and we never could have thought that all of our direct mail will be replaced by, you know, online channels. Mm-hmm. And that's now the case with most publishers. I mean, there is still some direct mail, right? This is like 20 years later. So I think the same will happen. You know, the phone, the street, the direct mail, it's surprisingly resilient. And it's, you know, we're talking about, I mean, obviously people who are my age, baby boomers, they're more open to it. And I think it still works because, you know, surprisingly, we also see that a lot of people give when they're asked, right? But I think younger people will need to be engaged through different channels. And they're very much, I think their world is really structured more around influence and their peers and the peer influence and what peers are doing. And that's really why the whole crowdfunding emerged because of that. And so that kind of traditional relationship that I have with a charity and an institution, may need to be replaced with some other model where, you know, maybe charities, you know, collaborate to work around a cause, because we see in various research over and over and over again that younger people can relate more to causes, not necessarily who's procuring them. And do they really care if who's doing this is a charity or a social enterprise or a corporation? But I think charities will have to invent new ways to appeal or re-merchandise or restructure or and really, you know, make a case for themselves, also using more data, which, you know, going back to the conversation from 5 minutes ago, would involve understanding some data technologies and capturing and really using, because that's what young people will want. Yeah. And
I love that notion of re-merchandising.
It's really like retooling of what you're doing, essentially. Yeah. But again, you know, charities start with amazing assets that rarely anybody else has. Mm-hmm. But they need to, I mean, listen, I think transitions are hard. I think disruptions are hard. I lived through disruptions. We, you know, underestimated it. We minimized it. A whole bunch of smart people didn't really, but it happened anyway, right? Yeah. You can't stop it. It happened anyway. So I think people, everybody would just be smart to embrace it and to, you know, be very sober-eyed about this and mm-hmm. to start understanding how they can appeal to youngers. And it's not going to be easy. And, you know, people always want a silver bullet. Well, there ain't one, right? It's a whole bunch of strategies that have to, you know, cohere, and you learn. And, you know, another thing that is not working for the charitable sector is because of the, I mean, charities are just not good at talking about what they didn't do well and how they failed. Mm-hmm. And that's because of the whole ethics of, you know, they get money from donors, and donors just want to think that they're doing amazing. So there is this culture of complete aversion mm-hmm. to risk-taking, to lessons learned, to sharing and publicizing that. Well, how are we ever going to move?
Yeah.
Right? Like when we... And because I think a loss of this will be experimentation, best practices, sharing. But again, in the culture where people are afraid to share their failures because they're just like considered bad. Yeah. And it's just like I think the environment has to become more real and more embracive of this change. And I think, you know, I mean, boards have a huge role in this as well, right? By pushing charities maybe into their, you know, outside of their comfort zones, mm-hmm. for sure.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I mean, that's the sort of greatest point of influence between sort of like, you know, a general public, so be they volunteers who are high skilled or board members and the day-to-day operations of the charity. And perhaps in, you know, boards can take on more of a an advocacy role for the charities, right? When they go back and, you know, take up their private sector roles and start to help move the wheels on that end as well.
Yeah. Well, boards, I mean, they're amazing boards. And I think it's just incredible. The governance structure is, you know, has like a many, many pluses. But one thing that I think boards cannot afford to be anymore or do anymore, they cannot be the protectors of status quo. I think boards have an urgent need to understand that they have to break the status quo themselves. Because I often talk to executive directors, and again, from what I'm getting, is like they don't feel they have permission.
Hmm.
Right.
Well, yeah.
Boards come in and out 4 times a year. You know, they're busy. I think boards need to engage more on the sexual level, right? Where I think something more than your charity is at stake. It's like the entire charitable sector.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it comes to you at the end of the day, right?
Yeah.
As well.
And I think there's,
you know,
so much
change, right?
Yeah. I think the boards can be, in my experience, so risk averse, right? And you take, we're kind of plucking them out of predominantly corporate environments where risk is a very natural part of doing business. And then all of a sudden when they put their board hat on, it's like...
So interesting.
We can't...
It's so interesting.
We can't do these things. We can't invest in these things. Yeah.
I know. It's so interesting. I observe that as well. And I just... I think it's really fascinating that mm-hmm. that particular paradox it is. Mm-hmm. It is. And, you know, I think it's interesting to me because everywhere I look, I see that, you know, charities will just have to have more business skills. Mm-hmm. More business skills, you know, strategy, technology, capacity, learning, succession planning. And those skills call for, you know, now you cross over into the for-profit space, so call for some of that risk-taking and learning and investment and all of that, right? And you would think, to your point, that boards would, you know, often coming from those, that they would be the champions of that. But often it's the contrary.
Yeah.
And it is really interesting.
Fascinating. So it sounds like there's a lot of leverage points here, including, you know, some of the governance pieces and like the audit pieces. I think next we should talk to Bruce McDonald and see about pulling those other policy levels.
Well, that would be because he's involved. He's working a lot on various policy initiatives, and you know there is that piece as well, right? There is the government piece, and mm-hmm. yeah, for sure.
Wow. Well, definitely lots of things to think about and take action on.
Yeah.
Certainly no sweeping. You know, these are big challenges that our sector faces.
And
Personally, thank you so much for taking the lead on this. And as we've talked about, really putting it out there in the public, it's very easy to get stuck in talking to each other. And I love that this really elevates that conversation to a different level. So thank you.
Yeah. Not at all. I hope we do a small part of what we can.
Oh, you do a big part.
Yeah.
Big part.
Yeah. Excellent. Marina, thank you again for joining us.
You're very welcome. Thank you, guys. Thanks for inviting me. And thanks for hosting this podcast. I think these conversations are super, super important, and they will be even more so going forward.
Well, folks, that's it for today's episode of The Small Nonprofit. I'm your host, Cindy Wagman, and this show is brought to you by The Good Partnership. As a reminder, if you want more resources around raising more money for your small nonprofit, visit thegoodpartnership.com and download our free fundraising strategy guide. I'll see you next week.